You know, I heard saying that too. Someone said, well, every man has a price. Well, I suggest you, whoever said that, didn't do a thing. Never a man could not be bought. Not as a teenager. When Daniel chapter 1, he was taken as a captive, he was still a teenager in the city of Babylon, where he was trained for civil service in the Babylonian government. And when they tried to persuade him or force him to eat food that he knew was violating the laws of God, he refused to do it. Couldn't buy him off even as a teenager. Later on, his life went on, he proved himself time and time again throughout his service to the Babylonian, various Babylonian kings, that he was not going to be intimidated. You couldn't buy him, you couldn't bribe him, you couldn't threaten him. He gave you what he was right. But perhaps the best known instance of the life of Daniel is that which is recorded in Daniel chapter 6 in the sermon this morning. That's where our study is. And we're going to focus on probably the best known event in the life of Daniel. He was told that if he would just go along with the command not to pray to any god other than the Persian king Darius for just a month. I told him that just for 1 month, if he could pray to any god, making a request only to the king, then he could avoid a lion's den. But Daniel had one thought about the situation that was no sin. He wouldn't go along with that at all. You see, this man had no price. And I think it's so good he sets for us an example that we could very seriously learn as far as honesty and integrity in our community of people every day of our lives in the world which we live in. We live in a sinful way. The type of money was not made by Daniel. Judas, now he sold out for 30 pieces of silver. We sell him sometimes, I'm afraid, for a whole lot less. But Daniel encourages to be faithful. Daniel is a life study in faithfulness. As I said, we first introduced to him in Daniel chapter 1 as a teenager when he was taken away from his family, from his homeland. We don't know what happened to his parents. Maybe they were killed when the Babylonians destroyed the city of Jerusalem. Maybe they were also taken into captivity. Maybe they were just left behind as Daniel was taken captive himself. We don't know. But he's probably still in his teens, maybe early 20s at that time, and never saw his family again as far as we know. That was no excuse not to be who God wanted him to be. And now when we move over to Daniel chapter 6, we find that he has been in the service of the Babylonian and Persian kings for quite some time. I have a question. Does anybody know how old Daniel was when he faced the lion's den? How old do you picture him in the lion's den? You're right. He was probably at least 80 years old when they put him in the lion's den. He'd been in captivity since a teenager, and he lived through enough kings. If you trace the history, he was at least 80 years old when they put him in the lion's den. No, this was not a young man. Think about that. But through all his 70 years of career of public service, he was a rock and a tailor. A political leader with solid character who would not compromise right and wrong, and neither bribery nor threat, he'd shake his honesty. Known for that honesty and integrity, you see that clearly demonstrated in the instant we look at in Daniel chapter 6. Start reading verse 1. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom and 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom, and over these three presidents, who Daniel was the first, that the princes might give accounts unto them, and the king should have advantage. Then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king thought to set him over the whole realm. Then the presidents and the princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find none occasion nor fault, for as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. Then said these men, we shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God. And these presidents and princes assembled together to the king and said thus unto him, King Darius, live forever. And all the presidents of the kingdom, the governors and the princes, the counselors and the captains, have consulted together to establish a royal statute and make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days, save of thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. Now a king established a decree and signed the writing that it may not be changed, that it be not changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which altereth not. Wherefore King Darius signed the writing and the decree. We'll stop there for now. One of the things that Daniel learned, and learned very early on, that she depicted very clearly here in this particular instance, and that is that faithfulness arouses opposition. There will be those who do not like it. Didn't take Daniel long to make enemies. Particularly when you're dealing in a political world where power and status as almost currency, as almost something you had to have to survive. There were those who resented the power that Daniel had. King Darius, going to in chapter 5, had just barely taken over this particular, taken over the Babylonian Empire at this time. And he's trying to structure his government in such a way that he could make it manageable. So he sets up a government system where he has 120 governors or provincial leaders over various provinces. Those 120 governors would answer to three, King James calls them presidents, I think one translation says high officials, to three officials over them. But then something remarkable takes place. King Darius, who actually barely knew Daniel, he hadn't been in power that long, but he knew something of Daniel, was impressed with Daniel, and he exalted him, promoted him to a position over the other two presidents. He made him one of those three, but made him the chief where those two answered to him, and he in turn answered directly to the king. Now, if you get that kind of power among men who are power hungry, and what's going to happen? I guarantee you there's going to be some jealousy. And sure enough, there was. Verse 3 says, says of Daniel that there was an excellent spirit found in him. Now, there's various things I suppose that phrase could mean. It may refer to the fact that that through God's inspiration, he was allowed to have the ability to predict the future, as we know he did on various occasions. It may, however, just refer to an attitude that made him invaluable as an advisor to the king, or maybe both are involved. Whatever it might have been, verse 3 also goes on to say that the king set him above the whole realm. Well, those jealous co-leaders or those under him, subordinates is the word I'm looking for. Those jealous subordinates of his decided they had to discredit Daniel. So they began to look for something in which they might use against him. I hope that something could be said about each one of us, and I'd love to have it said about me what it said in verse 4. Then the presidents and the princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom. They looked through everything the man had done politically and his political career, looking for something that they could use against him to discredit him in the face of the king. But they could find none occasion nor fault, for as much as he was faithful. Neither found they any error or fault in him. Now think about that for a moment. They're looking for something that he has done wrong in his political career that they could use to discredit. Boy, that sounds like reading the news today. But it says, neither was there error or fault found in him. That's interesting. You see the word error there, I understand in the original language is a word that means a fault committed without intention. This man didn't even make mistakes. He was so faithful and so dedicated to doing what God wanted to do that he took his position with great responsibility, and he didn't even make mistakes. They could find absolutely nothing to use against him. But they're not going to give up that easily. He may have proven himself trustworthy beyond reproach or beyond question, but they're going to trap him anyway if they can. So they reach a conclusion in verse 5. Then said these men, we shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God. If we're going to get this guy, it's going to have to be on the basis of his religion. And so they set out to do it. Well, there was nothing in the law at that time that would interfere with Daniel's religious practices, so they had to come up with something. So verse 6 tells us that they all got together and conjured up a plot. They come in verse 6 to the king, and it says the presidents and the princes assembled together. Literally, the original says they thronged together. They came rushing together to come up with something. And they went to the king and said unto him, King Darius, live forever. All the presidents of the kingdom, now listen very carefully to how they word this. There's a lie in this, by the way, if you follow closely. All the presidents of the kingdom, the governors and the princes, the counselors, the captains, have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days, save of thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. King, we think you need to issue a decree, make it a law, that for the next month, nobody can make a request of anybody except from you, god or man.
Now think about it for a moment. That whole thing becomes a bit ridiculous. If you take this thing to its extreme, what it literally said is, you can't sit down at the supper table and ask somebody to pass me the salt. Because that's making a request of another man. I don't think that's probably what they were getting at, though. I think they're probably talking about prayer here. You will not pray to any god or man. Why would you pray to a man? It was not uncommon in those days for people to view their king as a god. To pray to no god or man except you, king. Now that would be high praise to the king, and of course the ego this man apparently had, he didn't mind being flattered a little bit. They just set him up as God, not just as God, they set him up as the highest God, and nobody gets to pray to any God but you. And Darius, who loves the flattery, doesn't think it through. Now I said there's a lie in that statement that they made. Did you catch it? All the presidents. Is that true? No, maybe two, but not all three, because Daniel didn't vote for this thing. They're lying. But had they said all the presidents except Daniel had said this, it might have alerted the king. So they can't exactly be honest here. And so Darius issues the order. Now this runs into another little bit of a problem. It's going to make an issue. Verse 8 tells us that the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not. Apparently, and I guess history bears this out as well, that the Medes and the Persians had a law that said once the king had issued a decree, it could not be changed. Period. You'll find that, by the way, in the book of Esther as well. Is that not a level of arrogance to believe that any human being could make a law that that would never, ever, ever have to be changed? There it is. Since Darius was considered to be a god, well, gods don't have to change their mind. They never make mistakes. And so this law has to come into play. You know, brethren, we need to understand something. Doing right has never been popular. And never will be. I'm afraid far too many times as Christians, we're longing for the day, we're hoping for the day when being a Christian will be socially acceptable and everybody will understand and everybody's going to love us. Satan's going to see to it that never happens. Never has happened. Never will. We live in a world that claims they admire those who stand up for what the convictions and what they believe, right? But they don't really mean it. You don't think so? Most of the time when people praise those who stand up for their convictions, they're praising those who stand up for the same thing they believe. Disagree with them and see what happens. Disagree with them and see when they start shouting you down. Disagree with them and see how quickly they start mocking you and ridiculing you. They don't really mean it. Jesus told us very clearly that we're going to make enemies if we stand for what's right. In John 15, verse 18, Jesus said, if the world hates you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. If anybody in the world ought to have been loved, should it not have been Jesus? I mean, when you think of the people he healed and all the good that he did, the Bible even says he went about doing good. If anybody ought to have been loved by everybody, it ought to have been Jesus. But Jesus says, the world hates me. If you were the world would love its own. Yet because you're not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore, the world hates you. Now, he's talking to those 12 disciples on that occasion, but is it not true of all of us? That when we stand for what's right, people won't like it. As a matter of fact, Jesus in Luke 6 and verse 26 warns us very clearly, woe to you when all men speak well of you. If everybody likes you, that may not be a good sign. Someone says, that man never made any enemies, that may not be a compliment. I know what you're trying to say, but it also may mean you never took a stand for it. Could you say that about Jesus, that he never made any enemies? Could you say it about Daniel? No. See, faithfulness arouses opposition. Now, I'm not saying that we have to go out and deliberately stir up and see if we can make people mad. You don't have to do it on purpose. It'll happen if we just live right. Number two, faithfulness demands courage. Daniel's now in a bind. He knows what the law says. And he knows the penalty of the law. Read it with me. Daniel 6, we'll start in verse 10. Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem. He kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. Then they came near and spake before the king concerning the king's decree. Hast thou not signed a petition of any god or man within 30 days, save that thee, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? Then the king answered and said, The thing is true according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which altereth not. Then answered they and said before the king, That Daniel, which is of the children of the captivity of Judah, regardeth not thee, O king, nor the decree that thou hast signed, but maketh his petition 3 times a day. Then the king, when he heard these words, was sore displeased with himself, and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him, and he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. Then these men assembled unto the king, and said unto the king, Know, O king, that the law of the Medes and the Persians is that no decree nor statute which the king established may be changed. Then the king commanded, and they brought Daniel, and cast him into the den of lions. Now the king spake and said unto Daniel, By God whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee. And a stone was brought and laid upon the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet and with the signet of his lords, that the purpose might not be changed concerning Daniel. Yes, Daniel's in a bind. A man of his integrity could not obey this command of the king. Verse 10 says, Now when Daniel knew the writing was signed, he's not operating out of ignorance here. He just hasn't been told. He knows full well what's going to happen. He also knew that this threat of a lion's den was not an empty threat. The Medes and the Persians often use lion's dens as a way of executing criminals. He knew this was not an idle threat. This was going to happen. The king wasn't bluffing. So what was he to do? Well, basically, as I see, he had 3 options. One, he could obey the law and stop praying for a month. Out of the question, right? He would have agreed with Peter when Peter said, We must obey God rather than man. Acts 5:29. Two, he could have found a private place to pray. I mean, can't you hear somebody say, Daniel, okay, so you got to pray. I got it. Just go ahead and do it, but just don't get in the king's face with it. Just go hide somewhere. Do it privately. So nobody knows what's going on. But somehow that would have seemed cowardly. He'd never hidden his faith before, and he wasn't about to do it now. Which only leaves one option. And I love the way it's worded. Verse 10 says that he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God. Now watch this part. As he did aforetime. What does that mean? He just kept doing what he'd always done. He did not start doing it to make a display of defying the king. I think sometimes a lot of people get themselves in trouble religiously with that. They bring persecution on themselves by publicly doing things that they haven't normally been doing just to see if people get upset. That's not what's going on here. Daniel went to his room. He kneeled before an open window facing Jerusalem to pray. Did it 3 times a day just like he'd always done it. And his enemies knew he would. And apparently they perched themselves outside his window and watched for it to happen. I got a question. Do people know your religious worship habits well enough to know where you are when it comes to worship time? Are they familiar enough with your customary worship habits that they know not to come calling on Sunday morning or Sunday night or Wednesday night because you're going to be at church and won't get home anyway? Do they know better than try to schedule an activity with you on a Wednesday night because you brought previous plans? Do they know that? Daniel knew that this was not the time to quit praying. I'm running out of time, I'm going to have to hurry. Daniel knew that that his enemies were out to get him. And in my mind's eye, the way I picture it anyhow, I don't know if it's right or not, it's just the way I see it. You got these men, these other presidents, and whoever's with them outside his window looking up and watching Daniel up there, and they see him pray, and I'm looking at the big grin spread across their faces, and they say, We got him. And they went and tattled on him. Now, Darius has the most interesting reaction. Watch how he reacts. Verse 14. Then the king, when he heard these words, was sore displeased. But I want you to notice he was displeased with himself. He realized he had been had. He had been played. And it says that he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver, to try to deliver Daniel. But the presidents came up and reminded him, you know what the law says, king? By all the Medes and the Persians, you can't change it. Daniel's got to go to the lion's den. Well, Darius hopes God will deliver him and expresses some confidence that he might, but then he's not so sure. Verse 18. Then the king went to his palace. This is after Daniel's been put in the lion's den. Then king went to his palace and passed the night fasting. Neither were instruments of music brought before him, and his sleep went from him. Darius just put in an absolutely miserable night. Put Daniel in the lion's den, says his sleep went from him, says he fasted. That may just simply be saying he lost his appetite. He had no desire to eat. You ever get so upset you just don't want to eat? It also says no instruments of music were brought before him. No nightly entertainment, such as kings in those days normally had, would probably involve as well no dancing girls. We would say he didn't even turn on ESPN that night. He could not bring himself to focus on anything except Daniel's situation, and he laid awake all night. Now, when Daniel was put in the lion's den, back in verse 16, it says, the king commanded, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. Now the king spake and said unto Daniel, by God whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee. Darius said, I know God will deliver you. That God you serve so faithfully, Daniel, he's going to deliver you. But then he lays awake all night. He's not so sure. Maybe not. Well, he arose very early the next morning, it says in verse 19, and went in haste. And I see him just beating a path to that lion's den. And when he gets there, in verse 20, it says, he cried with a lamentable voice unto Daniel. And the king spake and said to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, is thine God, whom thou servest continually, able to deliver thee from the lions? I don't know how quickly Daniel responded to that, but it had to have seemed like an eternity to Darius. When suddenly a voice comes out of that lion's den. O king, live forever. By the way, I want you to see something. If somebody had thrown you into a lion's den or been tricked into having you thrown into a lion's den, what would your prayer have been for them? Would you be praying that they might be the morning's lion chow for breakfast? Daniel prays, O Lord, O King, live forever. Now, that was the appropriate way to address a king in those days, but at the same time, Daniel shows a level of forgiveness. Like Jesus. Oh, you said Stephen, yeah. Like Stephen, lay not this sin to their charge, or like Jesus, Father, forgive them, for they know not what to do. And then Daniel explains. Verse 22, he says, my God has sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths that they have not hurt me. And Daniel said all of that took place in verse 22, but he says, because innocency was found in me. God found nothing wrong that I had done against him, and I've done nothing wrong against you, king. Now, you got a den full of hungry lions. They didn't get to eat the night before. An angel saw that. But they're going to eat breakfast. And what happens? Those two presidents that caused all the trouble, and their wives and their children, are dropped down in that lion's den, and they don't hit the bottom before the lions are. Brethren, the same God who delivered Daniel is the same God who will deliver us. Now, he may not do it as dramatically as he did for Daniel, but he will take care of us. Now, it may not be in this life. It may be in the next one. But he'll take care of us. Hebrews 11:33, as it lists the great accomplishments of the great heroes of faith, in Hebrews 11:33 it says they stopped, one of the things it says they did is stop the mouths of lions. Well, who's that referring to? Well, it could have been referring to Samson. Remember Samson who tore a lion apart with his bare hands? It could have been referring to a man by the name of Benaiah. I always like this guy. First Chronicles 11:22 says he went down into a pit and slew a lion on a snowy day. Well, that's rather interesting little details to give, but think about it. If you're going to face off with a lion, do you want it to be in a pit? Or do you want some open space? If you're going to face off with a lion, do you want it to be on a snowy day? Or on a day when you can get some grip with your feet? Personally, I'd rather not face the lion. But I don't think you can eliminate the idea here that it's talking about Daniel either, who through his faith stopped the mouths of lions. It is said of the Apostle Paul in 2 Timothy 4 and verse 17, Paul writes of himself there that he had been delivered from the mouth of a lion. Now, I don't know, and nobody seems to know whether that's literal or not, whether Paul is literally saying he faced lions. We knew Christians did it in the first century at times. Or if Paul's just using the word lion here as a reference to an enemy who wanted to kill him. But I know this much. Satan is walking about house, a roaring lion, doing what? Seeking whom he may devour. And that's you, and that's me. And the same God who stopped the mouths of the lions in Daniel's den will stop the mouth of the lion in ours. If we just put our hand in his, walk hand in hand with God, the lions of this world cannot hurt us. Faithfulness demands courage. Faithfulness brings deliverance. And God will deliver us from the roaring lion. Appreciate your attention.